Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Wednesday, June 17th, and this is your FT News Briefing. China had a violent standoff with Indian soldiers in the Himalayas. Federal Reserve Chair Jay Powell warned the U.S. Congress that there was significant uncertainty over the American recovery from coronavirus, and yet global stocks still rose yesterday. Our U.S. markets editor Eric Platt will unpack why. And Royalty Pharma pulled off the biggest U.S. listing of 2020. Plus, I'll talk with Alex Vitale. He's a professor of sociology at Brooklyn College and the author of The End of Policing. We'll talk about the calls to defund U.S. police departments.
There's no city council in the U.S. that's going to zero out the police budget this year. This is about building up an infrastructure that people on the ground think will make their community safer than relying on armed police.
I'm Mark Filippino, and here's the news you need to start your day. Stop me if you've heard this one before. Yesterday was another strong day for equity markets. On Tuesday, the S&P 500 closed up nearly 2%, the FTSE 100 gained almost 3%, and the upward trend that we've been seeing for most of the past 2.5 months continued. And this was on a day where there was arguably some negative news going on that would have understandably sent stocks down. The FT's Eric Platt explains how the market squared it.
Yeah, so there was some really optimistic or, you know, positive news out of Washington. We had retail sales figures, which showed just a surge in activity. I think retail sales were up about 18% in May, following a really steep decline in April. And investors are really, they're assessing the data and they're saying, okay, things were terrible, but we're actually starting to get some positive news. And it looks like maybe we've hit bottom, right? Maybe the worst is behind us. And the qualifier to that being, every investor I know is just constantly refreshing kind of the coronavirus tracking websites that they follow to see how new cases are trending. And I think the big worry, something which we saw in trading last week, was, oh no, actually we're seeing kind of this wave returning. We're seeing when you see equities drop in the morning, it's because we're seeing an uptick in cases in China, or we're seeing, you know, cases in Texas and Arizona rising. And that is what's prompting these fears that actually we could be going kind of to further lockdown measures. And so I think that's the kind of pull and push in markets right now, is how do you balance the rise of coronavirus cases we're seeing with some of this positive economic data that, you know, is starting to make the case that at least while unemployment is double digits, some things are returning, not to normal, but to levels where not all businesses will be going under.
And one company that had an especially good day on the markets yesterday, Royalty Pharma. In fact, it was its first day of trading after nearly 25 years as a private company. Royalty Pharma floated on Tuesday and saw its shares surge nearly 60%. It was the biggest IPO in the U.S. this year so far. The listing raised $2.2 billion after the sale of nearly 78 million shares at $28 apiece by the company and existing shareholders. The shares finished a very healthy first day as a public company at $44.50 each. Royalty Pharma's founder and CEO Pablo Legorreta said the company had held talks with biotech companies about funding research for drugs to address COVID-19. On Tuesday, U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order to reform police practices. Mr. Trump said the order would give federal grants from the Department of Justice to police departments that seek reform. This means conducting training for use of force and de-escalation.
These standards will be as high and as strong as there is on Earth. The vast majority of police officers are selfless and courageous public servants.
But Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic Speaker of the House of Representatives, said the order lacked, quote, meaningful mandatory accountability measures to end misconduct. The way police officers operate has been under renewed scrutiny since the death of George Floyd, and it's prompted another question in the public debate. How much money should these departments be allocated in the first place? Protesters and activists across the U.S. have made calls to defund the police, and in some cases, even abolish the police. Alex Vitale is a sociology professor at Brooklyn College in New York, and he's the author of the book The End of Policing, I spoke with him about his view on this question about defunding the police.
Unlike many countries, policing in the United States is an overwhelmingly local matter. We have around 18,000 independent local police departments, and they're funded by local municipalities through the city council and mayor, you know, utilizing local property and sales taxes in relationship to other local funding like schools and road construction and youth services and the construction of affordable housing.
And I think the thing that protesters are speaking out now in the wake of the death of George Floyd is, and speaking out against police brutality in general, they say that the amount of money that goes into these police departments shortchange other public services, right? Is that the case, Alex?
That's right. In many cities, we're talking about 30% of the city budget going directly into policing, and in some cities, over 40%. And when we add in jails and courts, even over 50% in many cases.
And because of this, there are these calls to defund the police. And I know this can be a complicated question, but, you know, broadly, what does this mean?
So we had a lot of movements operating across the country before what happened in Minneapolis, who were calling for their local city governments to move some funding from policing into community-identified public safety strategies. So these were usually specific dollar amounts that could be achieved through attrition or cuts to overtime or eliminating a particular program with a history of problematic outcomes and putting that into things that the community thinks will keep them safer.
Alex, from what I understand, members of the police community don't fully disagree with this. In some ways, they say, yeah, you know, take some of these things off of our plate that we're not the right people to do, we're not rightly equipped to take care of. Where do protesters and police agree on this?
Yeah, I think there are definitely some areas of overlap. One that may be counterintuitive is there are a lot of people in this movement who, while they want officers who commit misconduct to have consequences, to maybe no longer be police officers, they also understand that a lot of officers are kind of being thrown under the bus by politicians in an effort to deflect the movement away from its core demands. There's also, I think, more clearly cases of agreement that police really don't want to be in the mental health business. They don't really want to be in charge of homeless outreach. They don't really want to be filling our schools. So there's definitely common ground there to try to begin this process.
Now, there are some people out there who do want to abolish the police outright. But what you're saying is that defunding the police is not necessarily about pulling police off the street entirely right away so they can't respond to violent crime. It's more of a long-term approach.
That's right. There's no magic switch that someone's going to pull and poof, there are no police on the streets. And there's no city council in the U.S. that's going to zero out the police budget this year. This is about building up an infrastructure that people on the ground think will make their community safer than relying on armed police.
And we've seen a lot of cities in the U.S. take on a reform right now, Boston, Minneapolis, New York. Are there any models outside the U.S. that you're looking at that seem to have made a meaningful difference?
So the models that we're looking at are not so much those where people have dialed back the scope and scale of policing. We're looking at those places that never expanded policing into areas that are now common in the United States. So we can look, for instance, at the fact that in Europe, no one's ever heard of school policing. They don't put police in schools to manage these school problems. In the UK, if someone has a mental health crisis, they call the National Health Service and they get a clinical intervention. The closest analogy would be maybe places like Portugal that have decriminalized drugs and taken the police out of this problem and turned it over to health authorities. And so that's an example of the kind of thing we're looking for.
What's something that people following this story might not realize about the reform of police that you think is important to understand this whole thing?
I would just say that this is a movement that's led by people who have experienced a lot of violence and deprivation in their lives and for whom the police have not been a source of safety. And this is, as much as anything, a movement demanding enhanced safety for people. And it's run by people who have spent their lives trying to create that safety outside the criminal justice system. And I think we need to listen to those people on the ground who really know what the needs of their communities are.
You can read more on all of these stories at FT.com. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back tomorrow for the latest business news.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.